comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth, the show where you matter. Well, I just had a marvelous experience, a wonderful experience. I just finished being the guest on the show with Francis Etney, and it's always a real pleasure for me when I get to be the guest. I'm on the other side of the microphone, the other side of the questions, and just got off the air with them, and really was fun. And I hope you caught that. If you didn't, maybe you can go catch it in their archives. K-Files. Well, what about K-Files? You know, I tried sending today a test message out to all our subscribers, and it locked up after it sent out 126. Last week it locked up when we got 650 sent on. I can tell you without getting into the guts of the matter that it isn't our software. And our hosting company is working very diligently now, researching, trying to find out what it possibly could be in the server, because everything in the server looks like it's working right. But obviously something has started not working, and so they're researching that, and that's a good thing. One way or the other, we will get the K-Files to you this week. We do have a couple of other ways we can go, and we'll try that. Now, if you have not subscribed to the K-Files, be sure you do. It's absolutely free, and that's not doublespeak. When we say free, we mean free. That means like it costs you nothing. And you don't have to recommend 47 friends in order to get it free or anything like that. It's just free, okay? Very few things in this world today are free, but that is. And there's no reason not to get it, because it's always got some links to some interesting videos. It's always got links to interesting stories. It has the inside scoop on what's happening here at the Kevin Smith Show. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Oh, it also always has a free download. Sometimes it's a game. Sometimes it's software for the home. Sometimes it's software for business. It could be anything. But there's always a free download in each edition. And the whole thing's free. So get over there to kevinsmithshow.com and click where it says K-Files and subscribe. Also, if you're not a member, now would be a real good time to become a member. If you're a member, then you get to see the show. You can also watch the latest show that we did. So if you missed the live show, that's okay. You're going to pick it up. You're going to be able to see it within the next 24 hours. You can watch it. And then we have chat and forums and library, free ebooks you can download, Video Galaxy, and lots and lots and lots of other stuff. And we have special shows that we do that you have to be a member to get into. So it's 23 cents a day. We'll be back with Robert Felix right after this. My guest this evening is no stranger to the Kevin Smith Show audience. He's been with us before. And a couple of pretty hot shows, because what we were talking about was his book entitled Not by Fire, but by Ice. And although he was not the only voice out there that was telling us that the global warming story was a scam, he certainly, I think, was probably the most focused on voice because of the book. And he was telling us, look, it's a scam, folks. Their data doesn't match the actual data. The stuff that they're telling us is based on fiction. Well, now we know. Now we know that was, in fact, the case. And he didn't need to be vindicated, but I guess you could say that he has been vindicated. And Robert Felix, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks, Kevin. I'm very happy to be on with you. You know, you're talking about my first book, Not by Fire, but by Ice.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, and I know we're going to end up talking about something else too, or I hope, but just recently, in February, Al Gore had sent a letter to the New York Times in the op-ed piece, and it was a very, very long opinion letter that the New York Times printed. And in that letter, some of the things that he said is he said almost all of the ice-covered regions of the Earth are melting and seas are rising. And I just couldn't let that go by, because both parts of Gore's statement are false. You know, never mind that he only makes a passing reference to the IPCC and their fraudulent claims that all of the Himalayan glaciers will melt by 2035. Never mind that he just said that the oceans are rising precipitously, because the IPCC has admitted they were wrong. And never mind that he completely ignored the climate gate thing. But the thing is that his two statements are just flat wrong. Our glaciers are growing, they're not melting, and the seas are not rising. And you know, I do have a copy of this letter on the website for anybody who wants to see it on iceagenow.com. But I talk about I get specific is that in the Himalayas there are more than 230 glaciers growing, that includes some pretty darn big ones. In Norway, some of the glaciers are growing, but it's in the Himalayas, it's 230 glaciers, as I said, are growing. But I don't know. It just drives me nuts. In the United States, glaciers are growing, and that may be something that your listeners aren't even aware of, because so many people aren't aware of that. But the Nisqually Glacier on Washington's Mount Rainier is growing. The Emmons Glacier on Mount Rainier is growing. In southern Washington, there's Crater Glacier. You know, Mount St. Helens erupted back in 1980. And there was a huge glacier on top of Mount St. Helens. And that glacier, when the volcano erupted, the water melted, and there was ice and snow and ice and mud and bulldozers and everything else washing down the Toutle River. That glacier, it's called Crater Glacier, is now bigger than it was in 1980. It's growing like crazy. In California, we keep hearing about the melting glaciers, but in California, all seven glaciers on Mount Shasta are growing, and this includes the three-mile-long Whitney Glacier. It's the largest glacier in California, and it's not the only place. In Alaska, glaciers are growing there for the first time in 250 years. The Hubbard Glacier last year at this time was advancing at the rate of 7 feet per day, more than half a mile a year. And in Icy Bay, there were glaciers advancing, at least three of them were advancing a third of a mile per year. And then One of the things that Al Gore did is in his letter opinion piece in the New York Times, he included a link where he could go and see that in fact the glaciers were melting, and then that link it takes you to the University of Zurich to a scientist there who talks about the glaciers growing in Norway. He studied 80 glaciers. Well, there's in the Himalayas, there's 87 glaciers that are actually surging, so nothing about growing. But here's the other thing, is that this guy, this scientist, mentioned that the Juneau ice field is growing. Well, he didn't want to say growing, so he said the Juneau ice field has positive values. Well, the Juneau ice field covers 1,500 square miles, and it's the fifth largest ice field in the entire Western Hemisphere. So here's Al Gore's own his own reference saying that the fifth largest ice field in the entire Western Hemisphere is growing. In Argentina, the Perito Moreno Glacier is growing. It's the largest glacier in Argentina. In Chile, the Pio 11 Glacier is growing. It's the largest glacier in Chile. In Canada, glaciers are growing on Mount Logan, which is the tallest mountain in Canada. Uh-huh. In France, glaciers are growing on Mont Blanc, which is the tallest mountain in France. It's just, in New Zealand, you probably have some listeners in New Zealand.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The last I heard, there were 50, all 50 glaciers in New Zealand were growing, but I haven't been able to verify that lately, so if you have any New Zealand listeners who can either verify that for me or set me straight, I'd love to hear from them.
Well, you know, back when we did those previous shows where we talked about this, I got email for days because people were saying that, well, you say you don't get into politics and you talked about Al Gore. Well, look, if Al Gore decides that he's an auto mechanic and he starts promoting some auto mechanic procedure or some kind of parts or something like that, and somebody goes on the radio and says, well, those parts that he's promoting are not good parts. Well, what are we talking about? Are we talking about Al Gore, the politician, or are we talking about Al Gore, the parts salesman, or are we talking about the parts? Well, mm-hmm. We're talking about the parts.
Well, and you know, when I wrote Not by Fire but by Ice, I wasn't trying to, I found out I did, I wasn't trying to get into a political fight. What I had discovered in studying the dinosaur extinction and studying magnetic reversals and studying the Ice Age cycle, it just plain looked to me as if we were headed into an Ice Age, leaving out any politics, because there is a cycle to Ice Ages that shows up in the geologic record. It's clear that Ice Ages come and go about every 11,500 years, smaller Ice Ages. But it's called the Milankovitch cycle, and my guess is that any geologist listening tonight is going to realize that, yes, that Milankovitch cycle does drive the climate. So leaving politics out of it, this is just science.
Well, there's been climate long before there were politicians. Okay, just because they decided to wade into the climate, the area of climatology, that doesn't mean that discussing climate is political. There is climate, and then there are politicians, and the politicians, from my point of view, tend towards fiction on nearly anything they speak about. And they're some of the best fiction writers that the world has ever seen. But if all politicians, if every politician in the world were to vanish overnight, aside from the world suddenly becoming much more peaceful and prosperous, the only thing that you could say about its impact on the climate is the climate goes on. It's going to do what it does whether there are any politicians or not. And I think the only thing a politician can do with the climate is to do what he does with everything else he touches, and that is make it worse.
Well, you think about what happened with the Mayans and South American, at least you read about this happening, but that they used to sacrifice people to the sun god, and they would kill people in order to change the climate. And I don't think it worked 500 mm-hmm. years ago, and I don't think it's going to work today. We can keep on throwing businesses to the lions, so to speak, keep on sacrificing them, but it's not going to make any difference because humans, we're puny. I think we're being arrogant to think that we can make the climate go one way or another. I remember visiting Mount St. Helens, which in the scheme of things is a very small volcano. But I visited Mount St. Helens, and you look at these 3-foot diameter trees that were knocked over like toothpicks for, you know, hundreds of square miles. And it just boggles the mind as to what Mother Nature can do as opposed to what we humans can do. We'd have to send an army of loggers out there for years, I think, to cut down that many trees that uh-huh. had disappeared in a matter of, you know, were knocked over in a matter of seconds.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the power of nature is awesome. Now, associated with, at least in my estimation, associated with this, the idea that we're going through cycles in the climate and that we may be headed into another ice age. In fact, the last time you were here, I believe you told us it was your view that we are in an ice age.
Yes.
But aside from that, or I might say along with that, I think that, nothing happens in isolation. And so when we see these climate cycles happening, and look, folks, nobody's saying climate change isn't happening. If there was no climate change, that means the planet is dead.
Yes.
So climate change has been going on since the day the planet was formed, and it will go on till the planet turns to a crispy cinder in space by whatever means.
Absolutely. The climate was warmer 800 years ago during what's called the medieval warm period. The climate was warmer 8,000 years ago during what was called the climatic optimum. It was warmer when the dinosaurs were here. There are some scientists. There's one, Dr. Ian Plimer of Australia, who came out with a book last year, and I'll think of the name of his book in a few minutes, but Dr. Plimer says we've essentially been in an ice age for 37 million years, believe it or not, and that this is just one of our, we're right now in an interglacial within that ice age, and overall, just even for the last 2 million years, it's been getting colder, and so there's every reason to believe that it's going to happen again, and of course, I think it corresponds with magnetic reversals.
And well, that's where I was headed. That goes along with all of this.
You were going. So go ahead and go there.
Well, it seems to me that that may, in fact, be what's driving a lot of the climate, is what's going on with the magnetic field.
Yes. Well, in my first book, and not by fire but by ice, that was one of my big points, that it was driven by magnetic reversals. Some scientists will tell you, and there may be some university students out there who've heard this, they will tell you that the last magnetic reversal was 780,000 years ago at the Brunhilde-Matayama magnetic reversal. But one of the things that they're ignoring is magnetic excursions. Now, first, for somebody who doesn't even know what a magnetic reversal is, that's a time in the past when compasses would have pointed toward Antarctica instead of toward the Arctic. And believe it or not, the Earth's magnetic field, scientists believe the Earth's magnetic field has been reversed for half of the history. Well, one of the things I found in all of my studies is that there was a magnetic reversal called the Gothenburg magnetic reversal about 11,500 years ago, which just happened to be when we had a smaller ice age, if you want to call it that, when 40% of the large mammals went extinct. That's when the mammoth went extinct, the mastodon, the saber-toothed cat, the short-faced bear, so many animals went extinct 11,500 years ago at that magnetic reversal. There was, and some people would label it a magnetic excursion. It's a time when the magnetic North Pole moved south. Sometimes it moved south and just stayed there for like 500 years and moved back north. So it's hard to find in the record. Sometimes when it was doing that, it would fluctuate, going up and down and up and down, which I think would mean that there would also be a fluctuation in electric currents going through the Earth. But that was 11,500 years ago. There was a magnetic reversal 23,000 years ago called the Mono Lake magnetic reversal, and that's when we descended into a very catastrophic ice age, and many animals went extinct. We had a magnetic reversal 33,500 years ago. That was the Lake Mungo magnetic reversal, and just by coincidence, that's when the Neanderthals went extinct by many accounts, and we went into a short ice age. I keep on seeing them going hand in hand, these magnetic reversals, with ice ages and with extinctions, and here's the part with my new book, and with the arrival of brand new species on our planet.
All right, we're only a few seconds away from break, and I want to get into this magnetic reversal and what happens, and then also the extinctions and the arising of new species on the planet as a result of that. I want to do that when we come back from break, and we will. So folks, don't go away. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking this evening with Robert Felix. He is the author of a couple of really interesting books, and one of those books is Not by Fire, but by Ice, and the other one is Magnetic Reversals. Robert? The
Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps, all part of the same title.
And Evolutionary Leaps.
Yes.
A review of Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps has been written and published in the Mensa Review. Now, folks, you know, the Mensa people are smart people. And it was a very positive review. And in fact, they said, you know, at last someone proposes a solution that makes sense here. And the solution that they're talking about, the problem to which a solution needed to be proposed, is what you've heard me talk about here on the show, and that is the missing link problem in Darwin's theory, which even Darwin admitted was a huge problem. The fossil record was a huge problem for his theory. And basically, as I understand it, your book proposes the reason we can't find missing links in the fossil record is because there aren't any.
Absolutely. And I'm not alone on this. Now, I do have to admit, when I started out with this, I didn't realize how acrimonious the debate over evolution could become. It's the creeps versus the jerks. The creeps, they've been named that by the jerks, but the creeps insist that evolution creeps along in a smooth, gradual process over vast periods of time. That's essentially what Darwin said. Whereas the jerks, so dubbed by the creeps, they maintain that evolution makes sudden, catastrophic leaps. And overall, I agree with the jerks. But the question I have is what causes those leaps? So, I mean, I see the leaps, but what causes them? In my opinion, the jerks have never presented a credible mechanism to explain what causes the sudden changes. And I'm hoping tonight that I can shed at least some light on that. But I think that geomagnetic reversals triggered those evolutionary leaps.
All right, now, and why? What effect would a magnetic reversal have on the spawning, if you will, of a new species? What effect would magnetic reversal have on that?
Well, let me tell you a couple of things that I hope we can get to before I totally answer that. But a couple of things that are also spawned by magnetic reversals that I see is that oil, petroleum, carbon rains from the sky at these times in a predictable cycle. Because I see these magnetic reversals occurring in a predictable natural cycle. And I believe that the next beat of that cycle is due. But another, if you have anybody who lives near a Carolina Bay, I don't even know whether you've heard of a Carolina Bay, but the Carolina Bays are swamp-type areas, mainly found in the southeastern United States, but they've been found in Georgia, in North Carolina, South Carolina, Delaware, as far west as Texas. These scientists or people used to think that that's all they were, was just swamps. But all of them range, they're shallow, they only range from about 20 feet to 50 feet deep. And it turns out once the airplane was invented so people could fly over these things, they realized that these Carolina Bays are all, every single one of them is elliptical, and some of them overlap each other. And these things are big. They can range from a few acres big to bigger than a city. More than 2 million of these bays were blasted into the ground. They are swamps now. But about 12,500 years ago, about the time of the last magnetic reversal, something blasted more than 2 million of these holes into the ground across the United States. And you can go onto Google Earth and you can see them for yourself. This is not something I'm making up. You can see them for yourself. It's amazing. And until I started researching for this book, I hadn't even heard of Carolina Bays. So we'll get there too, hopefully. But anyway, now what I see, as we head into a magnetic reversal, our magnetic field strength weakens, which it is doing right now, quite spectacularly. But as our magnetic field weakens, our magnetic field strength, our magnetic field protects us from cosmic rays. And as our magnetic field strength declines, cosmic rays more and more of them are able to bombard the Earth. And during a magnetic reversal, for a short time, we apparently lose almost all of our magnetic field strength. At that point, cosmic rays, I mean, they do contain radioactive material. So at that point, I see the Earth being bathed in radioactivity, which would lead to mutations and to evolutionary leaps. Not gradual changes, but huge catastrophic changes. I would think that probably most animals, newly created animals, die, but some of them are able to adapt and live. And I think eventually, you know, it's still a new field, but I think eventually we'll be able to place almost all major species changes near a magnetic reversal.
Our magnetic field has been losing its strength, as you said, quite dramatically. Over the past 2,000 years, our magnetic field has lost two-thirds of its strength.
Yes.
And it's declining even more rapidly now.
Yes, it is. The rate of decline has picked up. In the last 100 years, our magnetic field strength has declined by 5%. So the rate of decline is picking up. Some scientists say we're 5,000 years from another magnetic reversal. Some scientists say it would take 500 years for it to occur. But other scientists say that a magnetic reversal could occur in as few as 30 days. And I'm with the ones that say 30 days.
Why?
Well, the reason for that is that there was a study done, and I can't remember the names of all the scientists now, Prevost, I think, and Cox, but scientists were making a study of lava flows on Steens Mountain in south-central Oregon. And one of the ways they can tell there had been a magnetic reversal is that lava, when it pours out of the ground, is non-magnetic because it's so hot. But as it cures, as it cools down what's called the Curie temperature, it takes on the magnetic field of the day. So, you know, it points whatever way the magnetic field is pointing. Well, these scientists drilled cores into the lava field at Steens Mountain. And they drilled some cores at the edge of the lava flow, and then they drilled some cores at the center of the lava flow. And I'm simplifying, but what they do is they drill a core, put their compass down there, and see which way it points. They discovered that the compass on the edge of the lava flow pointed in a different direction than the compass at the center of the lava flow, which means that the magnetic field reversed during the difference in time that it took for those two areas to cool. So it's possible that magnetic reversal could have occurred in as little as 30 days, based on that.
All right, let's say that we get up in the morning and discover that a magnetic reversal is underway. It's happening. How long is that going to take? I mean, 6 o'clock in the morning, we find out it just started. How long does it take? By 6 in the evening, is it going to be reversed?
No, I don't think it would be that fast. Now, you know, right now the North Magnetic Pole is moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether that's a part of it, whether that's a part of what I'm talking about or if that's just a normal fluctuation. But it is moving right now toward Russia.
Yep.
I can't answer how long that takes. As I said, some scientists would say it'll take 5,000 years. I'm going to guess 30 days.
What can we expect to see? How would we know? I mean, would it just be that our compasses wouldn't be working right? Or would we see any sort of cataclysmic things happening around us as evidence of the magnetic reversal?
One of the things I expect is, you know, and I talk about these Carolina Bays, I expect huge explosions in the sky. Now, the science is changing very rapidly. I came out with this book a year ago and where I was saying that, you know, talking about these explosions in the sky, much like Tunguska what was it, 1908, but of expecting explosions in the sky, because right now, within the last few months, and this is even since the book came out, scientists have discovered they've got a new three satellites now that can triangulate and look at the aurora borealis, and they have discovered huge explosions occurring in the sky up at the edge of our magnetosphere. Well, as our magnetic field strength declines, that edge of the magnetosphere, or magnetosphere, some people say, but the edge of that will be moving closer and closer and closer to Earth itself. And so I think those explosions that now occur 600 miles up will be occurring closer and closer to us. I think it's going to be a very scary time for everybody, for every animal, for everybody.
There are a lot of folks that listen to this show who are very much tuned in to the year 2012, and they believe that tremendous cataclysms are going to happen on or near December the 21st, 2012. Is there anything in what you've studied, anything in your magnetic reversal research that would indicate that?
Not really. I remember when I wrote the first book, I was just basing it purely on science, and I hadn't even heard, sorry to say, but I hadn't even heard of the Mayan calendar. Mm-hmm. And of course now I have, because so many people have called in and asked about it, but maybe it's right, I have no idea. But I haven't run across anything that would lead me to believe that is the date. It may be, I don't know.
All right.
But what I do know is, one of the books that I quote in my book, in Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps, is a book called The Cycle of Cosmic Catastrophes, and it's by physicist Richard Firestone and geologist Alan West. I mean, we're talking high-powered people here. And they talk about these Carolina Bays from 12,000, 13,000 years ago, about the time of the magnetic reversal. And they talk, when I say that I think radioactivity will accumulate on our planet, well, they discovered that at this same date as the magnetic reversal, radioactivity levels in the soil in...
Hate to do it, but a break's taking over. We have to step away. Let's check in right there when we come back from this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Robert Felix, and we're talking about magnetic reversals and evolutionary leaps. All right, now, you were telling us about a study that was done, and then we had to go to break, so I want to give you the floor.
Okay, you bet. Well, one of the things that I had said, one of the ways I think these evolutionary leaps occur is that as our magnetic field strength declines, it takes away our shielding. And our magnetic field actually shields us from cosmic rays, radioactive. Well, these scientists that I was talking about, these physicists and geologists from about studying soils in about 12,000 years ago in Arizona, in Michigan, in the Carolinas, they found that those soils had 2,000 times more radioactivity than normal. So it there it is. It shows up in the record. And as I did my studies, I found that the same thing has occurred in sync with the magnetic reversals 11,500 years ago, 23,000 years ago, 33,500, is that the amount of radioactive strontium spikes at these times, that the amount of beryllium-10, which is radioactive, spikes at these times. So what I'm seeing is that this has to, what other choice is there? It has to lead to mutations. I think this is what causes those leaps. There is no missing link. Is that we do take, and this is not just myself. I mean, the paleontologists, I think one of the big ones was Stephen Jay Gould of Harvard. He said that all paleontologists know that the fossil record contains precious little in the way of intermediate forms, transitions between major groups are characteristically abrupt. That's Stephen Jay Gould. He wrote a book called Punctuated Equilibrium. And what he's saying there is most species remain largely stable over long periods of time, and then some cataclysmic event sets rapid change in motion. He says that evolution tends to happen in fits and starts, sometimes moving very fast, sometimes moving very slowly, or not at all. And I think we'll eventually find that evolution essentially moves along very slowly and gradually for 11,500 years, and then wham, we have a jump. And I think that eventually the study of our magnetic field will show that.
Okay, so you're saying this cycle runs in about 12,000-year cycles.
It's about 11,500, and the reason I say that is it's tied in with precession, what's called precession of the equinoxes. And let's see if I can explain that in a.
Well, I think we understand what the precession is.
Okay.
We understand that the Earth, the axis of the Earth lines up a degree off of where it is,
yeah.
and every so many thousand years, and then it's another degree and another degree, and I think it's about 56,000 years for it to go all the way around.
25,800.
25,800, okay.
So you're probably talking about two times around. But
yeah.
Here's the thing, though, is that, and this kind of messed me up at first when I was researching this, because ice ages come along, major ice ages, about every 23,000 years, with smaller ones at the halfway point at 11,500. And so I'm saying this doesn't tie in with precession of the equinoxes, because precession takes longer. But then one day I found out that our solar system also precesses. It also has its own rotation. And so our precession in relation to the solar system takes up 23,000 years. So I'm thinking, and this is still not proven, this is certainly a part of my theory, but I think that every 11,500 years, as we are going through this precessionary cycle, that we somehow align with some part of the solar system's magnetic field, and wham, we have all of these things happen at once. That's the only explanation I can see at this time.
All right, well,
somehow it's an alignment.
Let's talk a little more specifically about the cataclysms. You were talking about, the one where the woolly mammoth, the mastodon, and other big animals, mammals, went extinct. Why? Now, let me throw one more thing in there.
Sure.
And some of them have been found with the food that was in their mouth, quick frozen, still in their mouth.
Yes.
So
I have.
Why? What's up there?
Well, I have one chapter in the first book, and not by fire but by ice, called Nine Stories of Snow a Day. But I think that that's essentially what happened. There were areas of the world where the snow was coming down so hard and so heavy that they literally had 3, 4, 6 stories of snow per day, which would have trapped these mammoths in one day and buried them, and there they were, frozen, because some of those mammoths have been found standing up. And scientists, even till this day, I mean, the ice, they still find mammoths as they're melting out of the ice. By the way, anybody who says the ice is melting, well, yeah, it's been melting for 11,500 years. But as the ice melts, they're finding these mammoths. They figure there may still be more than 1 million mammoths frozen in the ice. But some of them have been found standing up. And some of those mammoths, the meat is still bright red and fresh looking. And they've had occasions where Russian scientists have fed mammoth meat to their dogs, and the dogs loved it, no problem. The people didn't quite get up the nerve to eat it themselves, but their dogs loved it with no bad effects at all. So very, very, when it does happen, I see the ice ages coming along with it, and then I see the other thing is carbon raining from the sky. 11,500 years ago, or 12,000, however you carbon date this, but These scientists have found what are called nano diamonds, just littering the landscape. And some of these diamonds were small. They were the size of cold viruses, but other diamonds big enough to be seen with the naked eye. And scientists they found so many, they figured that these diamonds were raining down by the ton. Now, these particular scientists that I'm quoting, Firestone and West and Warwick Smith, they are blaming this on a meteor. But the thing is that at the same time, they can't find any meteorite fragments. So I don't think it was a meteor. I think that these explosions in the sky, like Tunguska, and I don't know if you're aware of Tunguska.
Oh, very.
Okay, but I believe that these explosions were like giant Tunguska explosions in the sky, except that there were thousands of them, and that they were actually creating these diamonds right in the sky and raining onto us and carbon. And, you know, some people laugh at that, but oil rains out of the sky on Saturn's moon Titan, and I don't know why it couldn't do it here. I mean, the Cassini mission has found lakes of oil on Titan that are bigger than the Great Lakes. And they talk about oil raining from Titan's sky. And there's no swamps on Titan that I know of where that oil would be created by stagnant swamps. No, that oil raining from the sky on Titan, and I believe that the same thing happens here on Earth.
So what we can look forward to, if magnetic reversal happens in our lifetime, is essentially what we saw in the movie Day After Tomorrow, plus oil raining out of the sky.
I think so. And, you know, there's ancient texts. You had mentioned the Mayan, you know, the Mayans in 2012. But there are ancient Mexican texts that talk about asphalt raining from the sky and oil and petroleum raining from the sky. There are different texts around the world from thousands of years ago.
We have to step away for a break. We will be back right after this. Welcome back. We'll open up the telephone lines in just a moment. We're talking with Robert Felix this evening, and quite an interesting conversation. You know, as accurate as Robert Felix was and is in what he had to say about global warming and taking issue with that, and not only that, but saying we are actually headed into an ice age, and in fact are already in the beginning of an ice age. The fact that he was accurate about that, and he was accurate about it, causes me to say, when he's got something to say about magnetic reversal, it causes me to say, I need to pay attention to this, because he may be right about this too. Now, Robert, based on the decline in our magnetic field, and that's been pretty well measured, and the rate of decline, how far do you suspect we are in time away from a reversal?
Well, that's still hard to say. You know, some scientists think it's 5,000 years away. I think it's a lot closer. And the reason for that is that with previous magnetic reversals, when our magnetic field strength had declined to about 15% of normal, then it had a sudden reversal. So it doesn't go all the way to zero and then do its thing. As it goes down to about 15% and then reverses. Well, the problem is right now is no one is totally sure of how strong our magnetic field is during, quote, normal times. So no one is sure of how close we are to that 15% point. So I can't answer you, except that when I look at the cycle of these returning in a regular beat every 11,500 years, and knowing that the last one occurred about 11,500 years ago, I think we're looking at it coming up soon. Now, admittedly, this is I'm going more out of a limb. This is more speculative than my first book, but it's still I see that all of these things did happen, and I see that the cycle is there, and so the next beat of the cycle is indeed due.
You know what I wonder? I wonder, because our entire space program has been conducted within far less than the last 100 years.
Yes.
And so everything we know about putting something in space is based on a very weak magnetic field. I wonder.
Yes, it is.
I wonder, because magnetism, when you disturb it just right, generates electricity.
Absolutely. Whenever you have a magnetic field, you have to have electricity. And, of course, the Earth does have electrotelluric currents running through it all the time. But yes, some of the previous magnetic reversals where the North Pole moved south, or sometimes it moved partway south and then fluctuated back and forth. Now, when it's doing that fluctuation, I'm guessing that huge amounts of electricity are running through the Earth, electromagnetic power, forces.
Mm-hmm.
I also, from what I can see, my studies show that during a magnetic reversal, tectonic activity increases tremendously. Including volcanic activity, including earthquake activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see all of the volcanic activity that's going on now and the earthquake, I mean, earthquake activity and volcanic activity both are now worse than they've been since before Christopher Columbus. I don't think that's an accident. By the way, I have forgotten to mention my websites. Could I mention those?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, because I update these almost daily. Well, iceagenow.com, I do update daily, and so I would keep this kind of information there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Evolutionary Leaps, and I update that probably two or three times a week. So I try to keep all of this information right out there for people to know and to see.
All right, and as always, folks, we have links. Robert Felix's picture to his website. So if you click on his picture on my website, it will take you to Ice Age Now. All right, I want to go to the telephone, and what we're going to invite our audience to join us. And if you have a question or a comment, then we want you to join us. And you do that by telephone. Now, the way that you reach us is you dial 623-444-5889. Now, that works from anywhere in the world, and probably on Nibiru as well. The toll-free number, if you're in the USA or Canada, we have a toll-free number, and it is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you, if you decide you don't want to make that international long-distance call, you may do something called a flash message. And what you do is you simply go to my website and scroll down. You'll see a link that says flash message. But you must be outside the USA or Canada in order for that to even get in front of my eyes, okay? If you're in the USA or Canada, we have phone numbers for you, and please use them. I'll even pay for the call if you need me to. You just dial 888-223-4599. That's toll free. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, hello there, Robert.
Hi, Kevin.
Yes, I'm very well aware that many that these cataclysms do happen on a cyclical basis, ones perhaps even on a precessional basis. Another person that put forth a theory for these huge cataclysms that have happened is Charles Hapgood, who came up with his Earth crustal displacement theory, where the weight of the polar ice caps gets so high that it actually causes the Earth's crust to actually displace like the peel of an orange over the lithosphere. What are your thoughts on that? Perhaps may have causing a lot of the destruction that we've seen in the past.
Well, I'm trying to remember his book. I read it many years ago. I can't say that he's wrong. I haven't seen that crustal displacement. Because I think it's more of an electromagnetic thing, where the North Pole, you know, that moves, but that the Earth's crust does not move. But there are a lot of people that would disagree with that.
I think maybe it could it be a combination of both, perhaps both events, you know, especially if, let's say, something astronomical is happening. Let's say, as you know, just as, you know, the planet goes through seasons, so does our star, and I guess our entire solar system when going around the great year of 25,900 years, around the center of the galaxy. So I guess the planet itself, the solar system goes through seasons, and those climatic changes, seasonal climatic changes, are, you know, traumatic on our planet. So there must be so on an interstellar scale also, which may also cause for these huge changes on our planet.
Oh, I agree. You know, because right now, in addition to our magnetic field shrinking here on Earth, is that the sun's protective bubble, because the sun has a protective shield of energy that surrounds our entire solar system, that protects not only the Earth but protects other planets from the radiation. And the sun's protective bubble has weakened by 25% just in the last 10 years. So absolutely, I agree there that it's not just us. I mean, it could be happening in the entire solar system.
Okay, thanks for the call, Kevin. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hi, Robert.
Yes.
Yeah. I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
You're pulling a lot of dots, connecting a lot of dots. I just have some problems with what you're saying.
Okay.
And I'll start by saying, even with a reduced magnetic field, and even with cosmic radiation coming in, which would really shake up the genetics, causing a lot more random mutations. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So as far as speciation goes, you're still relying on the concept of random mutations creating you know, viable new species over a short period of time. So it's, you know, to me, you're still involved in the same problem. Like, just because you've got excess random mutations doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be intelligently coherent to create a new
you're
species.
Oh, absolutely, you're right. I mean, absolutely, it doesn't mean that at all.
Right. Okay.
My guess is that these mutations, a lot of them will just end up in death because they'll be unworkable combinations.
Right. Well, okay. Here's one other thing. We assume that new species emerge out of existing species, and that may not be necessarily true simply because the fossil record shows that you've got a sudden arrival of a new species without anything, really before it. There's no transitory species or anything like that.
Right.
So you might kind of wonder, like, were they inserted or did they come from existing DNA? I mean, we don't really know.
No, I would have to agree. We don't really know. I've had, and I don't know where you're going with this, but I've had some religious leaders who really like what I'm saying because things do happen very quickly and it's more akin to the biblical sense of creation. But then they're unhappy with me when I'm talking about mutation. But all I can say is that the radioactivity that we're talking about that could do it actually does show up in the geologic record in sync with the magnetic reversals.
All right, John, thanks for the call. Interesting concepts. What about the possibility that when we get this bath of radiation, that's sort of like disinfectant? Maybe what's happening is it's getting rid of stuff that needs to be gotten rid of. And it's maybe that's the function as opposed to creating new species.
I guess I can't really answer that either. I know that the Neanderthals arrived on this planet about 115,000 years ago, according to the latest studies, and that's when the Blake magnetic reversal took place. And then the Neanderthals went extinct about 33,500 years ago, and that's by coincidence when the Lake Mungo magnetic reversal occurred. You know, there's been new studies out lately. There's just been stuff on the internet in the last couple of weeks, and I've included a link to this on my website. But The Hobbit, and I don't know if you've heard about The Hobbit or talked about them, but back in 2003, scientists discovered miniature human-type people, the bones and tools for them, on the island of Flores in Indonesia. And these humans, or humanids, but they were only 1 meter tall, only about 3 foot 3 inches tall as adults, and weighed only about maximum of about 65 pounds. Well, I found it interesting that they apparently showed up in the record about 880,000 years ago at a magnetic reversal. And then there's just a new study that just came out in this last week. They have now found more evidence. They named them Hobbit after Tolkien's book.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, just in this last year, they have discovered more stone tools from these hobbits under a layer of volcanic ash that's been dated to 1 million years ago, which just happens to be another magnetic reversal. So they just, I don't know, I keep seeing these, and now of course I'm looking for them, but I keep seeing magnetic reversals show up whenever there's an extinction, but also whenever there's a change in species.
I'm not sure there's a whole lot of, I'm not sure that I could enthusiastically embrace what I'm about to say as being a thread of hope. But there is a little flicker of hope in what you're saying, because you mentioned that there are some very old ancient texts from Mexico that talk about what was going on during one of the magnetic reversals, and asphalt raining from the sky, so forth. Well, obviously, somebody survived in order to write that down.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a good point. Now, in the Mexican ones, it was the manuscript Quiche, I think is how it's pronounced, and also Histoire de Nation Civilisée du Mexico. And then there's also Syrian tales about oil raining from the sky. And the Midrashim texts talk about naphtha or petroleum falling from the sky. And you know, it's interesting because in Arizona, in the San Pedro Valley, they have discovered layers of carbon that were deposited about 11,500 years ago. Now, this carbon, in some scientists have said, oh, the Indians must have set forest fires, and this layer of carbon is from those forest fires. But in some areas, this carbon is more than a foot thick. And they discovered one mammoth in Arizona, in the San Pedro Valley. They nicknamed her Big Eloise. But this layer of carbon, there was a big lump in the carbon, and so they dug through this layer, this blanket of carbon, and there was this mammoth that they called Big Eloise. Below the layer of carbon, they found mammoth bones, they found mastodon bones, they found all sorts of Clovis Indian tools and equipment. Mm-hmm. Above that layer of carbon, nothing. No more mammoths, no more mastodons, no more Clovis artifacts. And it's interesting because I saw the same sort of thing with the dinosaur extinction from 65 million years ago. A few years ago, when I was doing my research for the first book, I went to the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology in Drumheller, Alberta. It's the, at that time, at least, it was the biggest dinosaur museum in the world. But as you drive up to the Drumheller, to this Royal Tyrrell Museum, you look up on the hills and you can see a layer of coal. It's about a foot thick, and below that layer of coal, there are dinosaur bones, dinosaur remains, and Cretaceous plant material. Above that layer of coal, not a single dinosaur bone. The dinosaurs are gone, and the vegetation totally changed. And that happened there. It happened in Montana, where they have what's called the Z coal. Is below that layer of coal, there are dinosaur bones. Above that layer of coal, they're gone. And now scientists, again, they're trying to say that layer of carbon came from mammoth wildfires, but I've never seen wildfires that will leave a foot-thick layer of coal. There's something else has to be happening.
Right. Let me get to a flash message that we have here from Bob in Australia. Hi, Kevin and Robert. My question is, what will happen to Australia and its climate if this magnetic reversal does happen?
I am thinking that Australia will be probably okay. And the reason I say that, and I'll have to go back to the United States, but in the United States during the last ice age in the United States and Canada, all of Canada was covered with ice up to 2 miles thick, but the ice only extended a little way into the United States. And south of there, people could have survived quite handily. What happened, and this is worldwide as near as I can tell, is that the ice levels moved down about a half a mile in altitude. So, for instance, New Zealand, their glaciers are probably going to expand a lot. I'm not familiar enough with Australia to answer that totally, but I have a feeling Australia will be okay. I know that during the last ice age, for instance, the climate in the tropics and the subtropics remained almost the same as it is today. Climate in, I think, Florida, temperatures were only like 3 or 4 degrees lower than today. Or even coming back to the United States, in Seattle was covered by 4/5 of a mile of ice, 4,000 feet of ice, straight up. But 150 miles south of Seattle, temperatures were only about 7 degrees colder than they are today. So what I'm saying, if the ice age is the only thing we have to worry about, I think Australia will be fine.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin.
Hi, Stefan.
Hello.
Stefan.
Hello, Robert. I was just wondering, 30 days doesn't seem like it's too traumatic. I mean, what's the speed of that land-wise?
Well, that it's not that the Earth will turn upside down, but during that time, I think we'll see a tremendous amount of earthquake activity. And, of course, I don't think Quebec City has had much earthquake activity, so I wouldn't say you'd be worried about that. I'd be more worried about the ice. But during previous magnetic reversals, there are many islands that have risen out of the ocean by as much as 20 feet. It's amazing. There are some scientists back in the 70s that did a study on Barbados and a few other islands. And when you fly into these areas, you can look at them and you can see terraces. They're terraces. And when they dated the terraces, those terraces, they found that they corresponded with this precession of the equinoxes, meaning that there are giant earthquakes. So I would expect earthquake activity during those 30 days to be horrendous, and I would expect volcanic activity to be horrendous.
What would you recommend to be the best course of survival? I guess going underground would be best, eh?
You know, I...
Like, could that be the main reason why all these underground cities are being built?
It could be. I know that in some of the Indian traditions in the United States, and I imagine Canada too, but that some of the Indian, a lot of different Indian tribes talk about a couple like Adam and Eve sort of thing, but an Indian.
Hate to do it, guys, but the break is taking over. We'll get the rest of that answer when we come back. Don't go away, folks. We will be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Robert Felix. Robert, when we went away, you were about to say some of the Native American traditions had something to say about all this.
Yes, there's several stories in the Native American cultures and various tribes. But I was just trying to look it up during the break, and I didn't find it yet. But one of the ones talks about, and this goes along with what Stefan was talking about, is that this couple dug a deep hole in the ground and pulled sticks and things over the top of them to protect themselves from the fire in the sky, and that when then came giant floods that put out the fire, and that they were able to come out and, much like Adam and Eve, start up the new Indian tribe. And similar type stories are, you hear those with quite a few Indian tribes. So something was going on, and mm-hmm. absolutely, yes, is that people did survive, or we wouldn't know about it.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Yeah, or be here. Back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Mike, and this is Ryan in Washington.
Yeah, Ryan.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
Hi, Ryan. Mr. Felix, I live up in Washington, and we live right next to a big a pond up here that's... apparently, probably melted ice from when you were discussing earlier about the ice that used to be up here. I live on the west side of the state, but do you think in the event of this sort of catastrophe that going across the mountains to possibly eastern Washington would be a safe place to go to, or do you think that would be a safe bet to avoid any kind of mass flooding or something?
Well, of course, on the west side, you had now this is not going to happen this time, but 11,500 years ago when the glaciers melted, you had that giant flood going down the Columbia River, where the Columbia River was running 50 miles wide. That was because a giant lobe of ice, the Purcell, it was called the Purcell Lobe, but it moved south out of Canada, and it dammed up the West Clark Fork River, I think that's what it's called. But anyway, it dammed that up, and it created a huge lake in behind it called Glacial Lake Missoula, 1,100 feet deep. And when that lake got to be 1,100 foot deep, it was put so much pressure on the bottom that it blew out the dam, and this huge flood tore down the Columbia and created the pothole lakes, I think that's what they're called in western Washington. I personally think it would be safer on the eastern side, mainly because I think that most of the volcanoes will be going off, and because of the way the world rotates, most of that ash is going to be going your way, I would think. But if I were moving east of the mountains, I'd want to go east of Olympia, because during the last ice age, the ice extended as far south as Olympia.
One last question.
Yes.
Hello. Oh, is it documented for sure that the equinox alignment is directly going to happen directly on that day, or do you think it could be off, or is that day the day where?
What day are you referring to, Ryan?
Well, December 21st, 2012. Is it going to happen exactly on that date, or is it like off? Because some people say the calendar. So I'll take it off the air.
I don't trust that date at all, but that's just my personal opinion. I think that date could be off by, and I could be off by 100 years or whatever. I fear that it's going to happen in my lifetime, but I could be off. But no, I don't trust that date at all. Personal opinion.
One thing I want to clarify is the 30 days issue. When you say this could happen in 30 days, you're not saying that it could happen 30 days from now. What you're referring to is that once it starts, it could complete the reversal in a 30-day period.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry if I gave that impression. Yeah.
Well, no, I got a flash message asking that question. So.
Okay. No, I do not believe it's going to be coming in 30 days. It may be 100 years from now. I don't think anybody can answer that.
Okay.
But once it does start, and again, I'm. Other scientists, I don't call myself a scientist. I'm a scientist. I'm a science writer. I've looked at all of the information, but some scientists say it could happen, once it happens, it could happen in 30 days, but others say 500 years it would take, others say 5,000. I think the ones who say 5,000 years are way off, just based on that Steens Mountain study.
Okay, from Tony in Australia. Tony says, what are we to believe? Well, he says, what's going on? I mean, with the 2012 thing and now this earth tilt, and we'll talk about the earth tilt in just a moment. What are we to believe? I'm scared, Kevin. I don't want my family to die. I'm not that old myself. It's not our time yet. I wish I'd never heard of this crap. Well, Tony, nothing is being said here or in any of the books that have been written that has not been already available in print for several thousand years. It's not new information. Now, there are people newly discovering this information, but this information has been, I would recommend you read Revelation, Nostradamus, Mahabharata. This stuff's been around for thousands of years, this information. And so this is not new. It's not anything to be afraid of. You didn't die today.
Well, plus, one other thing. When you were born, there's an invisible stamp on your butt, and that's your expiration date. You were born dying. Okay? So it didn't happen today. It might happen tomorrow, but if it doesn't, okay. I wouldn't worry about any of this. But the tilt, you're not talking about the Earth actually tilting over, are you?
No, I'm not. Now, one of the things I would say, I do not sell food on my website. But I do strongly believe that the people would be very wise to start a food storage program. Because if I'm right, even if you're not covered with ice, you're going to see a breakdown in the way food is distributed, and you're going to see a breakdown in climate, where if these volcanoes are going off, that they're going to be cooling the sky, and at the same time, underwater volcanoes are going to be heating the oceans, which is going to pump more and more moisture into the sky, and we're going to be looking at ice ages. So food, and even if I'm wrong, you can always eat the food later.
That's
so
true.
Going back to your question about, no, I don't think that the Earth physically turns upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the people who did endorse my first book, though, Professor Emeritus of Geology John Sanders from Columbia University, he was not only a geologist, he wrote several books on geology, but he also studied astronomy. And he pointed out that there is one of our planets that is, in fact, upside down, and so possibly that could happen. So I haven't seen the proof of it, but then there's other studies. David Talbot, who wrote Thunderbolts of the Gods, and he quotes a lot of Indian stories, a lot of them, where the Indians saw the stars fall from the sky, which would indicate that what was actually happening is that the Earth was turning upside down. So I haven't seen the evidence, but there is so much of that Indian lore that talks about that I can't totally rule it out.
I've read some reports that say that Antarctica at one time was approximately where Australia is today.
I think that's possible. Just with the tectonic movement, I mean, all of the continents are moving about as fast as a fingernail grows, and over a million years or 2 million years, you can move a lot of miles. You know, if you look at a globe, America, South America, they would fit very nicely into the underbelly of Africa.
Sure.
And scientists actually now do believe that those continents were once connected, and that they have just been moving apart, and they're still moving apart at about 3/4 of an inch per year. So yes, Australia has been in a different place, Antarctica has been in a different place, so many parts of the world have been in different places at different times.
But a magnetic pole reversal does not mean that you have a reversal of the physical poles. It's
right.
An electronic thing.
Right.
Well, not electronic, but I mean it's an electromagnetic thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think that the Earth physically turns upside down at all. So it's not even something that we would see happening, other than the fact that the tectonic movement, that we'd be having giant earthquakes and giant volcanic eruptions, and so that I would expect. Well, for instance, Yellowstone, the last time it had a major, major super eruption was about 640,000. And just by coincidence, that's when what's known as the Big Lost magnetic reversal occurred. Again, I don't think it's a coincidence.
So do you think that in this magnetic reversal, it may set off the super volcanoes like Yellowstone?
Yes, I do fear that. Or, you know.
Yeah, see, now I got to join Tony. See, now I'm scared because I'm down here in the kill zone.
Okay. is Phoenix in the kill zone from Yellowstone?
Within a few hours because of the ash, yeah. Because of the ash within a few hours.
Well, the ash is going to be going the other way, away from you. Because during the last time Yellowstone erupted, I mean, as badly as we're talking about, there's areas in Nebraska where the ash was 7 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you imagine if you got ash 7 feet deep and it's glassy, and it's not only accumulating on land, it's landing all of the rivers, so it's killing all of the fish, and those rivers are running into the lakes, and so your lakes are becoming entirely filled with ash. Oh, that would be an unimaginable disaster.
All right, we have to step away for a break. And when we come back, we'll be on Final Approach. And that means, of course, if you have a question or a comment, you need to give us a call, even if you've never called us before. But if you're a first-time caller, be sure you tell me you are when you call, okay? All right, we'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Robert Felix. Robert, let's go straight to the telephone and take this call, and then we have a flash message we have to get to, and then I have a question. So we got a lot to do in these last few minutes. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions. If the poles shift, you know, like we say, we know everything about electricity, but what it is, does he see that affecting our electricity, you know, in any way, you know, tearing down the
grids
and stuff?
I don't know. Ask him.
I think it would have to affect it. Well, you know, look at how solar flare is going to affect the entire electric grid, and if we're losing our magnetic shielding, I think that we'd be seeing more solar flares. But yes, even now, you know, during the auroras, the aurora borealis can sometimes cause corrosion in metal pipelines and can cause electric disturbances. So I would think that a magnetic reversal would be causing huge electric disturbances.
Do you expect the shield to go totally down when this happens, as far as protecting us from the sun and UV rays and stuff?
I don't think anybody can answer that totally, because they say that other times when it's gone down to 15% of normal, is that then the magnetic field reverses all the way. So we may still have that 15% protection. But that's, I like more than that. But what we do know, I can't answer you totally on that, but what we do know is that 12,000 years ago, radioactivity levels in the United States in the soil increased by 2,000%. That we do know. So however much it does decline, at least it allows that much radioactivity in.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call. I got a flash message here from Leonardo in Puerto Rico. Uh-huh. And he says, Kevin, interesting show tonight. Please ask your guest if Al Gore really invented the Internet.
I'm sure he did.
Okay, now look.
Thanks for the question, Leonardo.
Got a question for you. I've been holding this is the Trump card up my sleeve. I've been holding this one for you.
Okay.
with all that radiation that bathes the Earth when we go through a magnetic reversal, how do the cockroaches survive it?
Well, a lot of them probably because they're living underground. But, you know, there's another interesting thing is that animals who lived in the fast lane got hammered a lot worse. And I think it's the animals that have to run out into the Holocaust to get food.
Mm-hmm.
Because the animals, like turtles, who move very slowly, they haven't changed all that much in the last 5 million years. And that's the case with so many different kinds of ocean dwellers. The ammonite, which apparently had a much faster metabolism, died out, whereas the nautilus still survives to this day. So the studies do show that the animals that had the most compulsive need for calories are the ones that change the most, whereas the ones, alligators that can hide underwater, many during extinctions, during the dinosaur extinction, for example, when 76% of all species went extinct, only 14% of the freshwater dwellers went extinct. So there was something about the water that protected them.
Nope. So if you could live under the water, you could. There are habitats underwater. So
that's why I'm saying too, mm-hmm. is to have that food supply so you don't have to be running out into the Holocaust, because the ones who can get by with less food and without eating as often seem to have survived much better.
Survive
much better. For instance, during the last extinction, 11,500 years ago, almost all of the animals were the, not all, but almost all of the animals were the, I shouldn't even say that, 40% of the animals were the adults weighed more than 100 pounds. 40% of them went extinct. And I think that's because they couldn't hide. Whereas
I'm in trouble.
But if you have food and if you can hide, and I don't know whether lead on our roof would help. There's so many things I don't know that I'd like to know.
Old caves and mine shafts might become prime real estate.
I think they could. I really do. As long as you're not caught in one of those earthquakes in them.
Yeah.
I'd want to make sure I could escape. But I do think that old caves and mine shafts would be, or perhaps even standing under a bridge. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that caves would be a good idea. But, you know, I have a feeling those cave paintings from 12,000 years ago were there probably because some of the people were hiding in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you have solar lights, like I've got a couple of little solar lights, you know, with all that radiation coming in, all you would have to do is set it out for about 10 minutes and it'd be charged up for 24 hours.
There you go.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea. I do think that greenhouses are going to be like gold because of the food situation, and because when this happens, it's going to be getting colder. So greenhouses, I think, will be like gold.
Mm-hmm. To underscore something you said earlier, this could be 100 years off. It could be 500 years off.
Yes. I don't think it's 500 years off, but it could be off 100 years, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Because, the carbon dating of the records... some say that the last magnetic reversal was 12,200 years ago. So if I'm right about every 11,500 years, then we're due yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of this carbon dating can be off a little bit. So I sure don't trust the 2012 date.
Well, you know, what I say about that is I don't know. You know, I don't know. And actually, I don't think anybody knows for sure about this date. However, I intend to have a party December the 21st, 2012, in Bangkok, Thailand. I've already got the place picked out where the party's going to be. And
okay.
it's going to be a lot of fun. And this is not a joke, okay?
All
right. Live band, live music, great food, tremendous atmosphere. And what I say is, if December the 21st, 2012 is truly when we're all going to go, then okay, I'm going out partying.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think, and I've had people say, you know, you just take such a flippant attitude about it. But that's not the case. It's not a flippant attitude. It is, I can't stop whatever's happening and whatever's going to happen. Therefore, since I can't stop it, I'm not going to fear it. I'm going to plan a party. And then if destruction doesn't happen, we have a great party. If destruction does happen, well, folks, I'll find out at the same time you do. So I encourage everyone, especially if you're afraid, come to the party. December the 21st, 2012, Bangkok, Thailand, and we'll have a good time. Robert Felix, thank you for being with us this evening. Stay on the phone with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for this evening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.